Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for May 7th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, there may be some movement on Capitol Hill on the Water Resources Development Bill. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason breaks down the supplemental coverage option in the new farm bill. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat, 836.5, settled down at 6.5. July, 841.5, down 4.25. Soft May wheat settled at 729.75, down 2. July, 737.75, down 1.25. May corn settled at 510.25, down 2.75. July, 514, down 3.5. December, 509.5, and it settled unchanged. May soybeans settled at 1451, down 13. July, 1446.25, down 13.25. November, 1217.25, down 8. May soybean meal settled at 481.30, down 5.30. May soybean oil settled at 4067, down 24. June live cattle, now these are last trades, 137.75, down 55. May feeder cattle, 183 even, down 47.5. And May lean hogs, 114.95, and they are down 110. And those are Wednesday's settlements from Chicago.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says temperatures in the U.S. Midwest will trend warmer Thursday, with highs over 80 degrees occurring further to the north into a large part of Iowa, eastern Nebraska, northern Illinois, and possibly into a part of southern Wisconsin and southern Michigan. Cooling will occur in the U.S. Midwest late this week and into the weekend, with temperatures returning to a more seasonable range of 60s and 70s. A more significant bout of cooling will impact the northern U.S. plains and Midwest during the early to middle part of next week. Strong thunderstorms will develop tonight and continue Thursday from the southeastern high plains region of West Texas through the low plains region and into central Oklahoma and eventually eastern Kansas. Rain totals to 1/2 inch will be most likely, but several counties and parts of counties will receive more than 1 inch of rain. Greater rain will occur Sunday into Monday from eastern Texas to eastern Kansas, Missouri, and Illinois, where 3/10 to 9/10 of an inch and locally more will be possible. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin our discussion this afternoon with what I want to call a fly around, and that is you giving us your best estimation and update of where planning progress is around the Midwest.
Well, my best guess and estimate. I've been talking to a lot of farmers today. I'll start out in Indiana, and this would be in an area that's east and south of Indy. Planting is progressing, lots of corn going in, more so than what they expected to see. And that's what I've been hearing from everywhere, that they're really seeing corn on corn come into the game. So that, again, have we got enough acreage built in or not, even if we lose some in North Dakota? Northern Illinois, just getting started. Ground's in really good shape, so they expect that they should be able to hammer quite a bit in. Pennsylvania, heavy planting, a lot of the corn getting done, and they're into beans also. Mississippi, done on corn, almost done on beans. They're a little bit behind there, but they don't seem to be too concerned about that. Minnesota, planting started on Monday in a lot of areas, which I was kind of surprised about, and they're going pretty strong today, and they expect to keep going, but there is a rain situation coming across. And, of course, North Dakota, which is the big wild card for all of us this year, and these guys are basically east central, a little bit north, north and east of Bismarck. They had 2.5 to 3 inches of rain last week, another inch on the way today. He said if they get an inch, they should be back in by next Wednesday or maybe even before. He said as long as they don't get more than an inch. Last year they started on the 12th of May, and the insurance date is the 24th. He said last year they got everything in with no problem. He said average farm up there, Dave, is 7 to 10 days, and they're done. But they're kind of locked in because fertilizer, they got fertilizer on already, so they'll probably end up planting some shorter maturity corn, which will have an impact on what yield is. So a lot of active planting going on everywhere.
Let's turn our attention then to how futures traded today. One of the things I picked up is that there were soybeans delivered on the river. Yep. And for the life of me, I cannot figure out why someone would do that when you can get 40 or 50 over bases by not doing that.
I cannot figure it out myself, and yet, that 176 deliveries at the board was a huge surprise today. They were figuring 4 to 7, mm-hmm. and we came in with 176. Not sure what exactly is going on. I don't know if the importing of beans is having some type of an impact, but somebody's doing something, and I can't put a finger on it right now, Dave, to be absolutely honest.
It is really strange. I thought, man, I'm going to ask you that question because it is so odd.
Yeah, I wish I knew the answer to it. That would be the good thing.
Turn our attention to how beans fared in its trade today.
Well, when you looked at it, we July tested the 40-day, but it did come back off. We did have a 16-session low close today, which was not a great situation, and yet, we still are at a very good price at that 14.46 and a quarter. When you looked at Novi is just seems to be caught between that 20 and 40 day. We had a 10 session low on that one. And, ConAb came out today and said Brazil's crop is probably going to be up to 89 to 90 million metric tons. I didn't think that was any great surprise, to be honest with you. They've been talking for a while that Safrina beans are really doing well. But we saw some other technical things when you looked at corn. July corn had a double top at 519. And December corn had a double top at 509.5. Now, a double top is usually a short-term top being put into the marketplace. Does it mean the end of the world? No, not necessarily, and especially not when you're headed to a USDA report like we are on Friday. But it was kind of surprising to see, to be absolutely honest. We haven't been quite that technically on the money like we were today with both of those contracts. So we'll be watching close to see what the action is overnight.
And so it was a day of consolidation, except for Minneapolis wheat.
Yeah, Minneapolis. Well, Minneapolis, it's mighty, mighty cold out there and mighty, mighty, mighty wet.
That's right.
So there's not much happening on Minneapolis, and I think that's why we did see a more positive day. The other two were negative. They weren't, extremely negative. We talked about it this morning. We're out of the price range on the world market. we're way ahead on corn, over $2.20 ahead on corn. That's a big thing to overcome, and yet it doesn't seem to really make a whole lot of difference. I think we're just getting ready for Friday's report. And I did talk to one of our Kansas producers today. He said the wheat there is turning kind of blue-gray. And, you know, that's usually, if you look at corn, you know, we've seen that on corn during the drought, right?
Right.
Well, wheat does exactly the same thing. So he said, you know, he's probably down to within 5 days of he'd probably still have a crop, but it wouldn't be much of a crop anymore.
We're hearing more and more from analysts that we do respect saying 91.7 million acres is too low.
Well, you know, I've been in that camp ever since February. You know, it's a situation where, especially when you hear the corn on corn being planted.
Yeah.
The big difference, I think, when you look at the February number or you look at the March planting intentions number, which reflected the February number, both of them, the March intentions being March 1st, we had quite a move in the corn on March, you know, after that March 1st time frame. And I think a lot of guys said, you know, it probably makes more sense for me to go to corn. And we really haven't lost much of that move, actually, so it's probably a wise decision. Now the question comes down to where will we expand acres? When I hear corn on corn going in Indiana, where we were thinking a lot of it might not go in, I hear corn on corn. In fact, one of my corn on corn guys out in Iowa told me he's actually going to expand acres this year. That scares me a little bit. And so I do think we could pick up some corn acres. I do think we're going to pick up bean acres. I could see a million bean acres without a problem at all. And if we picked up a million on corn and a million on beans, that would put us right in the ballpark of what I would consider to be average, you know, for our planting between corn and beans. So it's going to be interesting. North Dakota is 3% of the total crop. That's what they are. They got 2.95 million acres. Mm-hmm. So they will have an impact. There's no question. So if we lose a half million there and pick up a million somewhere else, well, we might end up going up by a half million.
But we have about 30 seconds left. And who knew it, but the Amazon River is now a destination for soybeans.
You bet. They shipped their first grain shipment out to Spain today in the port of Villa de Conte, which is near the mouth of the Amazon River. It could become the largest export port in Brazil because it's going to serve Mato Grosso. And this year they figure they'll take about 80 million bushels out of there, next year 160 million, and they're expecting exports out of Brazil alone to double in the next 10 years. I think a lot of that will be based on whether they can get rail built or not because of the toll roads.
Wow. So, thank you, Jackie.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
In agricultural news, the Water Resources Development Bill that currently is a subject of a House Senate Conference Committee appears to have cleared a first procedural hurdle. Senator Barbara Boxer, a Democrat from California, the lead negotiator for the legislation, says that Senate conferees have come to an agreement on a report and are awaiting a response from House conference members. The coming language is expected to increase funding for harbor maintenance projects and also could accelerate work on locks and dams. For seaports, the bill is expected to authorize a far bigger share of annual taxes collected for harbor maintenance spent on dredging work, which can allow bigger container, grain, and energy ships to reach more ports, especially along the Gulf region and East Coast. It will be the first major update of the Water Resources Development Act since 2007. Negotiators from Japan and the United States remained locked in negotiations on opening each other's markets to increased competition. U.S. officials are especially interested in convincing Japan to lower its tariffs on imports of U.S. beef and pork. Japanese media reports that U.S. negotiators sought a reduction in beef tariffs from 38.5% to 9%, while their Japanese counterparts offered a reduction to 20%. China's government today opened a new round of stockpiling for its pork reserves, its second bid this year to try to boost prices for the country's favorite meat from their lowest levels in almost 4 years. China maintains a reserve that is less than 1% of the nation's total consumption of around 53 million metric tons. China's demand is too daunting for the government to actually try to absorb enough supply. The pork stockpile, therefore, is often used less as an outright pricing weapon than as a way to encourage markets to follow the state's cues. The latest measure comes after the year's first stockpiling purchase in late March, which did not blunt falling prices. Mosaic Company said first quarter profits slumped 43%. First quarter earnings were $217.5 million, or 54 cents a share, down from $379.8 million, or 89 cents a share a year earlier. Net sales fell 14%. The fertilizer producers' potash and phosphate businesses have weighed on results. Net sales of phosphate, the company's biggest revenue driver, fell 16% to $1.3 billion, reflecting lower prices. Potash net sales fell 11% to $733 million, as higher shipment volumes were offset by lower prices. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The new farm bill will cause some producers to make a second decision related to crop insurance starting next year. Todd Gleason has more on the supplemental coverage option.
Farmers choosing this summer to enroll in the new Price Loss Program, or PLC, version of the Farm Bill will have a related decision to make next spring when signing up for crop insurance. They may choose to purchase the SCO, or Supplemental Coverage Option. University of Illinois Ag Economist Bruce Sherrick and Gary Schnicki ran some early numbers on the choice to get a feel for which producers are more likely to use SCO. Here's Gary Schnicki.
What we did was we looked at the coverage levels currently purchased on the combo product, and SCO will be more attractive to individuals with lower combo product coverage levels because, if a person's buying an 85% RP policy, 86 to 85% SCO isn't going to be all that attractive. So we looked at those regions where coverage levels were the highest and which crops they were the highest on. Coverage levels are the highest in the heart of the Corn Belt for corn and soybeans. And for example, McLean County, Illinois, average coverage level in that county is 82%. So over half of the policies sold in McLean County are at 85% coverage level.
The SCO is best thought of as an insurance rider of sorts. Again, it covers losses between 86% and the original crop insurance purchased. So in McLean County, Illinois, where farmers almost always buy 85% crop insurance coverage, the SCO would cover another 1%. That's just not going to be worth the hassle.
You probably won't do it because of the paperwork involved with it.
So, in the primary corn-growing counties of the United States, from Ohio to Iowa, it is very unlikely a producer would choose to use the SCO. However, the more marginal the growing area, or even more likely those producers growing crops under irrigation in the marginal areas, will consider using the SCO.
This may have potential, for example, for a farm that's buying a 75% coverage level RP policy. That's likely that one of the reasons why you could be there is because of your on irrigation or some other reasons. And then SCO may be attractive. However, there's probably a reason you're at 75%, and that is that you don't want to pay the premium from going to 75% to 85%, and SCO will have a pretty high premium cost as well for that level. So whether it's even advisable in those situations is an open question.
Open because USDA is still developing the process by which the new Farm Bill programs will be implemented this summer. That's the decision between PLC and another program called ARC. More importantly in this case, though, the Farm Service Agency will frantically try to create the massive SCO coverage and premium price matrix for every county in the nation between now and March 1 of 2015, too. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with our look at cash grain analysis is Stephen Linneber from the folks at Anderson's in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Stephen.
How you doing, Dave?
I am doing well. How about yourself?
Very good, very good.
Farmers are in the field left and right. What can you tell me about planting progress over there?
I would say locally, 15, 20 miles every direction of the Clymers facility. We feel pretty comfortable saying corn's at least 80% planted or better. Feel like guys wasting minimal time converting over to beans. Large farmers, 4,000 to 5,000 acre farmers that are normally, done 2 weeks from now in terms of corn and switching to beans. We're already feeling them switch to beans as they are completed with corn. So it feels like, planting progress and the shift to beans coming a little earlier than what we had probably projected a month ago.
Yeah, they're in a hurry to get it done. How about progress on sales? Where are you in sales relative to other years?
Oh, I would say, probably relatively close to average. If you wanted to put a particular pinpoint a number on it, I would say we're right there, on par with average. And I think that's mainly because 50% of folks are looking at values today for both old crop corn going into new crop. Very comfortable with values today, and there's the other half that normally don't forward sell and always play the cash market. So I feel comfortable there. I still feel that some guys may be backing off just a little as now crops in the ground, but they're still a little skeptical of emergence and crop quality due to the fact that soil temp's probably still a little cool, and we could sure use a drink of water.
Oh,
out
that's
here.
For sure. A drink could be well welcome over your way right now. Talk a little bit, if you will, about the basis. Usually when folks go to the fields, basis has a tendency to firm a little bit. Has that been the case?
Absolutely. Not so much the case in this particular scenario, and I think that's primarily due to the fact of farmers selling the month of April. Guys didn't have the opportunity to get an early start this year. Looked at basis opportunity from April to May. There wasn't a huge premium at the time for May. We bought up a little extra there in April and let that carry over, and now we're still seeing, relatively good farmer movement on the front end to where, basis isn't having to move. But in all honesty, I don't know if it's the planting that, normally would drive basis higher. I think we've got to turn our attention to the futures market. Mm-hmm. And see that we've traded, figures that are allowing 5 to 5.10 cash corn still available, and that's without a basis push. So okay. As bushels continue to move at $5 plus, I don't think basis feels like it needs to go much. The question now becomes, feels like the processor is pretty comfortable for May, and you'll see a premium there for June delivery, and I think June is where we're putting more of our focus.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
You bet.
That's Stephen Linneber from the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana, and I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather. It's National Roast Leg of Lamb Day. The first sheep were brought to North America by Spanish soldiers under the command of Cortes in 1519. The introduction of sheep into commercial cattle herds of the Western territories were not well received, causing bloodshed and social division. It's also National Home Brewers Day. Due to a clerical error when Prohibition was repealed with the 21st Amendment, home brewing of beer remained illegal. It was not until February of 1979 when President Jimmy Carter signed a bill repealing federal restrictions on the home brewing of small amounts of beer.
On this day in agricultural history in 1660, Isaac B. Firmbine of The Hague reportedly received a patent for macaroni. In 1847, delegates to a national medical convention in Philadelphia approved a resolution that established the American Medical Association. Early goals include launching programs on medical ethics as well as improved public health. And in 1925, William Lever died. In 1886, William and his brother James formed the Lever Brothers Soap Manufacturing Company. It was one of the first companies to manufacture soap from vegetable oils instead of tallow. By 1900, the factory was producing a number of well-recognized brands, including Lifebuoy. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, showers on the way, window closing for planting in the next few days?
Yeah, it does look a little bit on the stormy side. We've got some showers that will occur the rest of the day, today and tomorrow, across the northern parts of the Midwest, and that's actually the area where we'll probably see the most frequent precipitation over the coming week. But there will be a line of thunderstorms that will build up tonight and into early tomorrow, coming out of central Texas over to portions of southern Iowa. And as we go through the morning tomorrow, we'll see those storms marching right across a part of Missouri and eventually into Illinois. And we'll find a rather stormy afternoon tomorrow in parts of Missouri and Illinois. And then those storms will continue to march to the east as we go through the day on Friday. So we'll see quite a bit of shower and thunderstorm activity across a big part of the Midwest over these next 2 days. And we'll also expect a secondary system to come into play as we go into the weekend. And that will likely bring more rain, especially to the upper Midwest. But even the lower parts of the region will see some more thunderstorm activity. That will likely take place, especially on Sunday and Monday of next week. But even on Saturday, we may have a few showers around. So, yeah, you're right. The field progress across the Midwest is probably not going to be very aggressive for a while after we finish out the day today.
And when these two waves of rain are done, what about temperatures in terms of drying out?
Well, we will see a fair amount of cool and dry air moving into the middle of the Midwest as we move into next week. And there's actually going to be a risk of some frost and a few freezes occurring in the upper parts of the Midwest during midweek next week. But the air will be drying out, and that's probably the most important factor for especially those areas in the upper Midwest. Thank goodness we are behind in our planting, or this cold air coming up might have had a bigger impact on some of the crops. So there's always a mixed blessing in deals like this. But we are expecting to see a better dry down environment for a little while next week. The thing we have to watch for, though, is that as we bring warmer air back into the region, we'll likely generate more rainfall again. So the break will be somewhat short-lived.
So what we're looking at is a continuation of the pattern.
More or less, I think that's correct. But we've made some good progress here in the last few days, and I think that's probably the most important thing to keep in mind. It's been warm, and we're actually going to see fairly warm to hot weather not only this afternoon, but tomorrow afternoon as well in the eastern parts of the region, Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky in particular, but even parts of Illinois will probably warm up fairly quickly tomorrow.
And warmer at night, too, so speeding up the germination process.
That would be correct. We don't see any significant cool down until the early to middle part of next week.
Thank you very much, Drew.
Thank you, Dave. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. Use the link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.